Rootslandnation.com. Listen to back episodes of the podcast. Stream original music. Check out the latest fashions. Rootslandnation.com. We're your culture.
Osiris.
The Rootsland Podcast. Stories that are music to your ears.
Take this veil from off my eyes.
Let's go and have some fun.
Let's go have some fun on the beach, where there's a party. It does make total sense that a show that explores reggae's journey from Kingston to Cali has a chapter titled On the Beach, named after a song not only central to the growth of reggae in California, but can be argued was one of the most important songs of the 20th century. Recorded by the group The Paragons and released in 1967 on Duke Reed's Treasure Isle label, Jamaica was still buzzing from their independence from England in 1962, and the island was in the process of establishing its own cultural and national identity. And after 400 years of slavery and colonization, it was music, arts, and literature that led this rebirth. And by the mid-1960s, the great era of ska music had started to wane, making way for the rise of rocksteady. And there was no place this was more evident than at Jamaica's ubiquitous street dances. These outdoor neighborhood gatherings were an essential part of the social fabric that kept Kingston's inner-city communities connected, grounded, engaged. Street dances have always served as a means of expression, socialization, and cultural preservation, especially in ghetto areas, where crime, poverty, and unemployment are prevalent. The dances empowered people, gave them something to look forward to. Even if it was just for one night a week or a month, they could escape the intense pressure of the slums and celebrate life, love, music, and dance. Most ghetto residents couldn't afford to buy records, and it wouldn't be until 1990, over two decades later, that the island would have its first all-reggae radio station that actually played music relevant to working-class Jamaicans. So these parties became safe havens within the garrisons, the de facto source for the island's forgotten class to hear the latest hit songs and upcoming talent. Model homemade fashions, created by aspiring inner-city designers, and showcase dance moves developed by self-taught ghetto choreographers. You have to remember, Jamaica's elite and ruling classes looked down on ghetto culture for generations. They still do. I know now we see the images of the Jamaican Prime Minister and high society politicians and celebrities attending the Kingston premiere of the Bob Marley biopic One Love, gloating with Hollywood types in their jackets and ties. But when Bob Marley was alive, they considered him a dirty weed-smoking dread. Those people didn't like him, or his message of rebellion and self-reliance. He was a threat to their very existence. They're the ones who drove him into exile. And truthfully, he never cared much for them. He did sing, "I have no friends in high society."
And I know I have no friend in high society. You did? Them could have never give you a penny, I say. I man must have lived. Choo-choo.
So with little or no support from the island's politicians, people took things in their own hands. Starting back in the 1940s, the street dances played a pivotal role in the evolution, entertainment, and education of ghetto people. Tom the Great Sebastian Wong, a Chinese-Jamaican businessman, set up the very first commercially successful sound system, and others soon followed. Coxon's Downbeat, Duke Reed's Trojans, King Edward's The Giant were among the early top-ranking sound systems that worked the circuit from Kingston to country. They would overpack beaten-up flatbed trucks with generators, turntables, amplifiers, microphones, and a never-ending stack of homemade speaker boxes in order to set up these roadside soirees, bringing the music right to the people. And of course, being Jamaica, competition soon ensued between the various sound systems, all vying to wear the championship belt. Early on, the concept of musical sound clashes were born. Rivals from different areas would battle for street supremacy, and in order to prove they were worthy of wearing the crown, they had to excite the crowd with something they never heard, play selections right off the press. And in 1968, that meant rocksteady music. This was the age of the great singers, Slim Smith, Desmond Decker, Delroy Wilson, Elton Ellis, and the groundbreaking harmony groups like the Techniques, the Gay Lads, and of course the Paragons, who at the time the album and the song On the Beach was released, consisted of John Holt, Tyrone Evans, and Howard Barrett. The record backed by Tommy McCook and the Supersonics, one of the elite studio session bands of the era. Now, most mainstream music audiences probably never heard or paid much attention to the title song, On the Beach. In fact, if anything, what this album was best known for was its fourth track, an intoxicating blend of the sensual and socially conscious, a song also ironically beach-themed, titled The Tide Is High. Which incidentally was covered by the punk pop band Blondie in 1980, who would take it to number one on the Billboard charts in both the US and the UK. No doubt a great accomplishment, but one the world and the industry could have definitely survived without. Yet what happened at a street dance in Spanish Town in late 1968, when a selective from the Supreme Ruler Sound played the Paragon song On the Beach, would cause a paradigm shift in the way people perceived what music was and what it was capable of being from that moment on. You see, that night in the Spanish Town sky, there was a musical big bang, and a whole solar system was created. And these new stars in the galaxy would later become known as dub music, and dancehall, and hip-hop, and drum and bass, and EDM, and reggaeton, and afrobeat. Now that's what I call a party. You see, a week prior to the dance, the owner of Supreme Ruler Sound, Rudolph Rudy Redwood, was at Duke Reed's Treasure Isle studio, preparing for his upcoming clash. The local Spanish Town businessman and his sound system may have not gotten the same props and respect as his big, well-connected competitors, and the crowds that attended his Spanish Town dances may not have been as hip as those nearby Kingstonians. But they loved to party in Spain, as they called it, and they had a knack for hearing a hit song. Plus, Rudy had an ace in the hole, a solid friendship with legendary producer Duke Reed, whose catalog of hits were a staple at street dances across the island. This allowed Rudy to get his hands on valuable pre-releases, exclusive mixes and unreleased tracks that other selectors didn't have access to. Songs that helped him win sound clashes in the past. Back in the day, getting an exclusive song from a producer to play at a dance wasn't as easy as downloading a WAV file onto a flash drive and uploading it onto a laptop. In 1968, Rudy had to go to the actual recording studio and cut a dub plate for the song, which is basically a one-off test pressing cut directly into an acetate lacquer, which looks, sounds, and plays a lot like a vinyl record. But they are expensive, and the engineer only has one chance to get it right. If he screws up, there's no going back. And in Jamaica, someone always pays the price for a mistake. Legend has it, while the engineer Byron Smith was cutting a dub plate for On the Beach and running the song through the mixing board right to the acetate, he realized he inadvertently left out the lead vocals of singer John Holt. Quickly making an attempt to take it off mute, Rudy stopped the engineer, abruptly, and told him to continue with just the instrumental version of this song. This was unheard of. As an experienced sound man, Rudy heard something in that empty space, with just the sweet rocksteady rhythm playing and no lead vocal. It was something musical, something magical. And if he felt it, maybe the crowd at that Spanish Town dance would feel it too. Meanwhile, a young engineer running the dub cutting equipment at the time wasn't so confident in Rudy's musical instincts. His name, Osborne Ruddock, better known as King Tubby. And rumor had it, he laughed at the engineer's mistake. However, in the end, it would be Rudy Redwood who would have the last laugh. And he'd win the Sound Clash. Spanish Town, Jamaica, has always been home to historic events. It was the island's first capital, from 1534 to 1872, initially occupied by the Spanish, then captured by the British. It's also where the island's governor, Sir Lionel Smith, would read the Proclamation of Freedom on August 1, 1838, marking the emancipation of all Jamaican slaves. In its prime, Spanish Town was the island's most affluent city, its streets lined with stately brick homes and grand monuments. But over the centuries, it's lost a lot of its grandeur to the ravages of time. Most modern-day reggae fans know Spanish Town from the hook of the 1983 Barrington Levy hit Prison Oval Rock, a song in which Barrington recounts performing at Spanish Town's Prison Oval, an entertainment and sports complex aptly named for being on the same grounds as one of Jamaica's most notorious prisons, Spanish Town Penitentiary. In fact, it's so close, Barrington Levy was able to see the prisoners dancing during his show. Spanish Town would once again make history in late 1968. The Saturday night session was in full swing. Drinks flowing, herb burning, everyone dancing to John Holt's and the Paragons on the beach. A crowd favorite. What could possibly be better? When all of a sudden, the DJ announces he would be playing part two of the song. The audience paused with curiosity, anticipation, unaware of any part two to the song. Supreme Ruler of Sound turns down the volume on the original John Holt version of the song on one of the turntables, and without missing a beat, mixes the instrumental dub that Rudy cut at Duke Reed's studio the previous week. Immediately, the vocal track disappears like magic, leaving the music alone blasting through the sound system. At that same time, the DJ takes the mic, starts encouraging the crowd to sing along on the rhythm, coaxing them to do their best John Holt impression. And to everybody's shock and surprise, except of course Rudy, they do. The place lights up. The audience joins in like a choir, singing every word to the song. No longer observers at the dance, they're now participants. And they're overcome with this new experience. In fact, they enjoy it so much, they don't want it to end. The mob of revelers force the DJ to play it back at least 20 times from top, over and over again. Each time they enjoy it more. Word in Jamaica spreads quick, and the crowd's reaction to Rudy's dub plate had immediate and significant reverberations, as Jamaica's top producers, Cox and Dodd, Bunny Lee, Duke Reed, all take notice. And soon after that dance, it would become standard for most Jamaican singles to have B-side instrumental versions of the original song. Prior to these versions showing up on singles and dub plates, sound system DJs would improvise small talk over the limited space of an intro or outro of a song. With the advent of the long-form instrumental version, it now allowed more time for a DJ's witty banter, leading to better-crafted lyrics, more sophisticated, and elaborate rhymes. A skill that would become known as toasting, where Jamaican wordsmiths such as U-Roy, I-Roy, King Stitt, Dennis Al Capone, and others would freestyle verses over these versions at dances and parties. Many of these toasters were inner-city youth, most from deadly garrison areas. Toasting became a way to express themselves, calling attention to the deplorable conditions where they were raised. At the same time, boasting about their lyrical prowess and the fame and fortune they would soon attain. There was one Jamaican youth who loved attending these street dances in Kingston as a child, absorbing the music, watching the DJs work the turntables and the mic. Clive Campbell would move up to the Bronx with his family in 1967, at the age of 12. With a wave of immigrants that came from Jamaica and the Caribbean in the late 60s and early 70s. Like so many new arrivals in the country, Clive is picked on as a kid, bullied in school. He's forced to assimilate and adapt to New York City street culture. He becomes a graffiti artist, rolls with the Bronx crew, the Ex-Vandals, taking on the name Cool Herc. Still, Clive never forgot his Jamaican roots and those fond memories of the neighborhood street dances of his youth. He was inspired to build his own sound system and learn to work the turntables like they were musical instruments. Cool Herc would emulate exactly what the Supreme Rulers of Sound did all those years earlier in Spanish Town. Except instead of using his turntables to mix together a vocal and instrumental track, Cool Herc would mix breakbeats together, which are short snippets within the songs where just the drums play, but basically creating the same outcome as Rudy Redwood. Uninterrupted rhythm that left room to create magic. Scratching and mixing, breakdancing and rapping would all evolve from Herc's innovative turntable techniques, and he would be known as the father of hip-hop. I'm sure Grandpa back in Jamaica is proud of his boy. A short time after that dance in Spanish Town, Duke Reed would re-release the Paragon song On the Beach, with a version featuring the popular toaster U-Roy. In reality, one of the first remixes. And pretty quickly, toasters would go from feature artists to headliners. In fact, by 1981, when Bob Marley, the king of reggae, passed away, Jamaica had already crowned a new king, King Yellow Man, king of the dancehall. Born with albinism as an infant, Yellow Man was rescued from a trash bag by a garbage collector after his birth mother left him in the garbage to die. King Yellow Man would take toasting to new heights, and his popularity signaled yet another new age for Jamaican music. The age of dancehall. The infusion of hardcore Jamaican street slang into the mix, along with slack lyrics, was an affront to many old-school reggae heads, an intrusion into the mellow one-love world of roots music. But the kids, they loved it. And the music business is like an overindulgent parent. What the kids want is what the kids get. But not to be left out of the mix, literally, that night in Spanish Town also turned out to be a stoner's dream come true. As the toasters were becoming the talk of the town on the streets of Kingston, that night also spawned an intergalactic mission that was traveling high above the skies of Kingston in a rocket ship called Dub Music. Now that producers were going to feature versions on the B-sides of their singles, this offered a blank canvas for a new generation of mixing engineers that were now becoming stars themselves. King Tubby, Errol Thompson, Lee Scratch Perry, Herman Chinloy, the great Augustus Pablo. They were like Monets of the mixing board, Rembrandts of reverb, creating sonic masterpieces with the use of echo and delays, reverberation, muting instruments, modulating and altering sounds. They stripped down the music, reimagined it, reinvented it, remixed it, to the point that these songs were unrecognizable from the originals. By far the most extreme, most eccentric, most misunderstood of them all, The Upsetter, the great mad scientist Lee Scratch Perry, who took dub music and its listeners to a higher realm with transcendent and textured dub mixes produced on a rudimentary four-track tape machine using an old cassette deck to play sound effects and vocal loops or whatever he can get his hands on to record or bang. And 50 years later, his works still sound as fresh and plays in the background for more college dorm room bong sessions than reruns of South Park. It would have been amazing if the small island of Jamaica would have just come up with one music genre that had global impact. But each generation, the music morphed, evolved, took on a life of its own, had families, children of their own. There were some interracial marriages along the way, some blended families, some biracial children. Perhaps what California's been able to do better than any place in the world is reunite the family, take these disparate camps that grew distant and bring them back together, reassemble the music, like restoring a vintage car with reverence and respect. But a few modern tweaks. And next week, we'll take a spin on the 405.
it happen, move. Let me see you do your thing, baby. Wow, Lord of mercy, goodness gracious, it's good like you know it's you. Wow, it, baby, wow, it one time, I tell you about it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.